Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Little Fish. This is the bonus Monday episode where we put down our favorite facts from the last 7 days and we go through all of yours. We get to sit back and enjoy them. Thank you for sending them in. My name is Dan Schreiber. I'm sitting here with Andrew Hunter-Murray and James Harkin. We've got a great batch this week, so why don't we get straight into it? Who wants to go first?
I will. I've got one here from Sword, and it is about the FIFA World Cup. Which is now all over.
Yes.
But I think we might have a few sort of stragglers in the FIFA World Cup facts.
This is to wean people off the excitement of what we've gone through.
Just to give people a bit of inside knowledge, when you email in, if it's a good fact and it's going to be in Little Fish, hopefully, that will be in about 8 weeks' time.
Actually, this is about the FIFA World Cup 2002. So it must be that's when they sent it. No, actually, it's about... all of the World Cups, I would say, certainly the more recent ones. And it is about the hometown of this person called Sialkot in Pakistan. And Sialkot manufactures all the balls used in the World Cup. So Pakistan is always represented at the tournament, even though the men's team is ranked 198th in the world.
Oh!
And Sialkot also manufactures the most bagpipes in the world outside of the United Kingdom.
No.
So it's all pipes and balls.
Leathery containers.
I guess they are, yeah.
You could, in extremis, use a squished football to be the bag for a bagpipe.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like jam, do a sort of tracheotomy on it, jam in the pipes.
Very true.
That'd be exciting.
Vice versa.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Scotland's first ever World Cup final. But oh no, there's been a mix-up with the delivery from Pakistan. So you're going to have to play with bagpipe. Guys,
yes.
It's a really good concept, but I think you have to suspend belief a little bit for Scotland getting to the final of a World Cup. Sorry, Scotland. This place, the industry began in 1889 in this Pakistani town when a British sergeant asked a local saddle maker to repair a damaged football. Nice. It's kind of been an industrial town for a long time, and they just have really good artisans, really good sewers and stuff, right. Because hand-sewn balls are way better than machine-sewn ones.
Are they?
Right. Yeah. Okay, Andy, have you got one?
Yes, this is a fantastic one. Okay, so it's from Elise Liu, and I'm going to give it to you in the form of a riddle.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm standing on Blackfriars Bridge overlooking the River Thames.
Yes.
And I'm in London.
Okay.
What country am I in?
The United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland.
You're in, you know, those places that rebuild the world in a small little town.
Are you in London, Manitoba or wherever it is?
Ontario.
Ontario.
Are you?
London, Ontario is a town of about 500,000 people between Toronto and Detroit in a bit of Canada sticking down between the Great Lakes. And Elise has just provided what they have in London, brackets, Canada.
Yeah.
They've got the River Thames. They've got Covent Garden Market. They've got Blackfriars Bridge, Victoria Park, Vauxhall Park, Oxford Street, Piccadilly Street, Pall Mall, Kensington Avenue, Regent Street. They've got...
They should get their own stuff.
No.
Why are they stealing all our stuff?
They've got Westminster, Hyde Park, Lambeth, to name three of the jewels of London, brackets, original.
Oh, wow. Really?
I just love it.
Have they got Hackney Fried Chicken?
And also, this is the weird thing, it is a crucible of Canadian celebrity talent.
Oh, I thought you were going to say crucible of Canadian witch burning.
No,
Celine Dion.
Why don't I tell you?
Alanis Morissette.
Again.
Justin Bieber.
Okay, yes, granted. But Elise provides a list of people.
Okay.
And I think there is quite a clear fame meridian.
Okay.
Which we pass at some point of the list. I'm not going to tell you when.
Okay.
All right. These people were all born in London, Ontario.
The Biebs.
Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
Ryan Gosling.
Yeah.
Rachel McAdams.
Yep.
Victor Garber. Paul Haggis.
Did he invent the haggis?
Invented the haggis. Pakistani man, actually. But yeah.
The one before Paul Haggis, I wasn't aware of.
Victor Garber, I think, is a producer. Okay. A performer. One's a performer, one's a producer. But I would say the fame meridian is between Bieber and Garber.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course, they didn't stay there forever. Gosling moved to Cornwall, which is in Ontario. And Rachel McAdams went off to York University, brackets, Toronto, Ontario.
Okay. Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Elise. Lovely fact.
Very good. Oh, yeah, I'm going to take us over to Dublin. Dublin, Ontario.
Ohio.
we're in Dublin now. This is from Michael McLaughlin, and he says, thought you might enjoy this. And this is new news. So this is sort of topical. The Hole in the Wall pub in Dublin was recently issued a closure order because there were holes in the wall. Yeah.
Have we been to this pub? I feel like I have been there.
I haven't been, and I think I'd know that we'd been there purely because it is the longest pub in Europe. It stretches 100 meters long.
No.
Yeah, it wraps around this whole road. On their site, it says it's 153 meters, and then other places, it says it's 100 meters.
But how is it deep?
Yeah, it's
Or
it's
is it
deep.
Just long?
Oh, isn't once you're inside, if it's long, isn't it deep?
Incorrect. No. It's a long pub going all the way along the road, right?
Yeah.
How deep is it front to back? Is it like 6 feet deep but 100 meters long?
I think I don't understand what deep means. What do you mean?
In a three-dimensional... Look, yeah. Jesus Christ. Right, look.
Get the pen out.
The pub is 100 meters long, right?
Yeah.
Which goes along the road.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
what you said, and there's no problem there.
Yeah.
But is it a shallow pub? Hmm. Which is only like that.
I don't have the dimensions on its width.
How tall is it?
I think it's largely one floor with a mezzanine bit.
Didn't expect you to know that. Very impressive.
I know. But it's been shut down because they had a problem with rat droppings and so on. So hygiene levels have not been great. That was part...
So, the holes in the wall?
The holes in the wall mean that that's where the access points are for all of the rodents that are getting in.
So it's not entirely because of the holes in the wall.
It's a two-parter. It was two-part rats problem. And holes yep. were the two things.
I've been to what was claimed to be the longest bar in, I'm going to say the world, but it could be Europe. Uh-huh. And this is the actual bar itself, not the length of the pub.
Yeah.
And that was bar one in Sheffield.
Ah.
And also, while I was there, I broke the world record for the biggest round ever sold, as in...
What? How many did you buy?
I didn't buy them. No, I was part of the... Oh, I was a recipient. Wow. Of one of the drinks.
When you say I broke the record, it did sound like there are 10,000 people here, James. And James was just like,
yeah, it's all right. I'll get it. Yeah, it's fine.
Can this go on the company card, please? I don't want to... Well, that's really impressive, Dan.
Very
you.
Cool.
Hole in the Wall.
Yeah, yeah, it had a name before. It became the Hole in the Wall. There's a rumor that it became...
It's called the Rat Shit
Pub. I'm sure it's a great pub.
I've been there. I think I'm pretty sure I've been there, and I'm pretty sure it is awesome.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And one of the thoughts is why it was given its new name, the Hole in the Wall, is because of the local army barracks that are around. They're not allowed on licensed premises, so they were thought that there might be holes that they could sell them the alcohol through.
That's clever.
No.
No, it's just a theory.
Right. Might be.
All right, let's get another. James.
Okay, this one is from John Kelly, and John was walking down the South Downs. So back in good old Blighty, not the South Downs in New Zealand or whatever. And John was curious about how many skeletons lay under his feet. And it turned out that according to John's calculations, there was roughly between one and five quadrillion skeletons.
Huh? Under his feet. We talking like animal carcass and insect carcass?
We're talking coccolith carcass. Because this is chalk. Yeah. And chalk is made of billions of microscopic skeletons. And John did the maths, and that's how many? 5 quadrillion maximum?
I don't know what a quadrillion... Is that just beneath him, or is it the whole of the cliffs?
I think it must be not just like the outline of his feet.
I'm
going to
draw
it. No, don't draw it.
Right, this is now not the pub. This is now the White Cliffs of Dover. Here's John walking along.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Okay. Has that helped you, James, with Andy's question?
Yeah. Neil Buchanan shitting himself. That's all I can say. for international... Never mind.
No, don't.
these are just coccoliths. They create a protective shell known as the coccosphere. And when they die, they sink down to the bottom of the ocean and they turn into chalk. And that's what the White Cliffs of Dover are made from.
It is pretty cool. It's pretty metal.
It's amazing just to think of how many billions of living creatures made those cliffs.
Yeah. Yeah.
For you to just draw a shitty picture of them.
Interesting.
It's hard seeing your art criticized, but... I'm going to say that was fair. Andy,
yes.
Give us facts.
All right, here's one. This is from John Cornwall, brackets, Ontario.
Is it really?
No. John Cornwall. Yeah. That's his name.
Oh, it's his name.
Yeah. This is a very interesting fact, I think. I saw a post yesterday about someone that was on a cruise that set off the day before. They saw someone reading that day's newspaper and asked how on earth they had got it. Maybe a drone delivery or a paperboy who'd invested in a speedboat. Oh. Turns out that some of the larger cruise boats, I believe they call them liners, have a printing press on board and they print a slimmed down version of some newspapers.
That's really cool.
This may be common knowledge, but I found it amazing and thought some of your listeners might as well. And I know that for Dan, who has an especial interest in printing out things and putting the date on the top, and yes, whether that's a wasteful policy, you might like to know that.
I think that's an amazing yeah, idea.
Because I've got personal experience of this, because I've done a voyage from Southampton to New York.
Yeah.
And they had something like 3 copies of the Times available for the whole ship.
Oh, did they?
Because
whoever gets it first and does the crossword spoils it for everyone.
Yeah.
See, what I'd like to do for cruises is a predictive newspaper where you pre-print every day of the voyage with the news you think is going to happen and how things are going to play out.
So everyone... Oh my God, ship hits iceberg. What the hell? No survivors? Oh my God.
But you live in this bubble of this news that gets passed around, and then you get off on the other side and you find out how different it was.
There was that TV show called The Bubble, wasn't there? Do you remember?
Yes.
It was very short-lived. I think it did really well in another country, like Netherlands or something. Mm. But they brought it here and they put celebrities in a bubble. Yeah. And then after a week, they asked some questions about the news, which obviously everyone at home would know.
Right.
But they wouldn't know because they were in the bubble.
That's quite good.
It's quite a good idea, but it didn't work at all.
What was the TV show where the guy got tomorrow's paper delivered to his door every day?
Really?
Yeah, there was a brilliant, it was an old American series, and basically he got a paper delivered. He never saw who delivered it. He was always rushing to the door saying, who's delivered this? And it was tomorrow's paper, and it was all the awful things that would happen in the city.
And he'd have to try
and
stop it.
He then had to run around and stop it. Oh, wow. I think at the end of the episode, he'd actually see the paper that ended up being printed.
And was it always like, better because he'd saved the day?
Yeah, it was like building doesn't burn down,
right?
Or whatever.
Yeah. I've never heard of that.
It's a fantastic show. I'm going to have to look it up.
I wonder how many things you could get to in a day to prevent.
Yeah, it's not a whole newspaper's worth, you know.
It's just the front page.
Would
right?
you choose yeah. the one which did the best good for the whole city or the one which was closest and you were more likely to be able to do something to save?
Yeah. Tricky. I might put in a few calls for the ones that were, let's say, on the other side of the river.
Yeah.
I might just ring up and say, by the way, there's going to be an atrocity is going to happen.
But the problem is that if you ring up and say the atrocity is going to happen, then you're directly implicated in that atrocity.
Oh, yeah. This guy was always being arrested for making bomb threats and stuff.
Day 3, he's most wanted man in America.
I probably completely butchered the explanation of the series. Wait, I got to find out.
Sounds a bit like Quantum Leap, doesn't it?
Do you know what? I think it was shown in a double bill with Quantum Leap. I seem to remember that. It was called Early Edition.
Right.
1990s supernatural drama. Yes, it was on for 4 years, from 1996 to 2000. Wow. And he uses his knowledge to prevent terrible events.
Do you think someone sent him an email the day before it got cancelled saying, watch out?
Here's one that's come in from Alex Nelson. Alex Nelson says, Sir Christopher Wren has a single IMDb credit. Art department on a 2013 episode of Question Time. And I looked it up and it's there.
That's very good.
It's very good.
So it was basically held in one of his buildings.
It was filmed in St. Wonderful. Paul's Cathedral. Oh, and he St. is listed Paul's. As set designer in the credits. And I tried to find more because it's actually quite hard to find on IMDb who's going to be listed. So you just have to chuck some names in and hope it lands.
Were you trying to find particular architects?
I looked. So Frank Lloyd Wright, he's got a credit for Cliff House Designer. But then you have things like in 2014, Sigmund Freud was named a spiritual consultant on a movie. But that's on IMDb. It's an official credit for Sigmund. They all have, I mean, everyone does have it because they appear as their self, don't they, in archive footage.
Yeah.
But it's weird when you see like Hitler's IMDb and there's 6 listings of thanks, you know.
What?
That's where it gets a bit strange.
What, do you know what they are? Can you remember them?
Some of them were ironic.
Surely these. Oh, right. Okay.
Like, I think Airplane has him listed as worst boy. That kind of thing.
That's such a good joke.
But I did see, I put Rosa Parks' name in there because last Little Fish that the three of us were on, she came up as a part of potentially being on Predator.
Yep.
And she has a lot of self and she has a lot of thanks, but she also has a credit for a show. She was in an episode playing herself.
I know this. She was in Only Fools and Horses, wasn't she?
She just did one episode. Like, yes. Yes.
It was really funny.
She gets engaged to Del Boy. Yeah. And then the whole caper that leads to the falling apart.
Is it? Can we guess it?
It's an American drama.
Early edition.
Imagine if that was right.
Yeah. And he reads the news of this civil rights protest and he's like, I must stop this.
Now you see me far.
No, it was a show I knew it, growing up in Hong Kong. It was on TV all the time. Touched by an Angel.
I was about to guess Speed because I was trying to think of other great bus-based.
Oh, yeah. Spice World, the movie.
Yeah.
Summer Holiday with Cliff Richard and Rosa Parks.
Do you think her agent was always calling her up going, there's a real amazing ceremony going on in your honor. You're up for it? Great. We've also got an offer from Keanu Reeves and Speed. No? Okay, I'm just checking. I always like to check with you. Always like to check. Yeah, she was in an episode of Touched by an Angel, which was an America.
Yeah, I don't remember that one.
It's hard to describe, but those
is
kind
it
of
like an angel who basically does the same as all these American dramas used to do, which is something dramatic is happening, and then someone has a superpower that helps them to solve it.
I think it might have been. I can't remember, but it's not a drama as in like Dallas, where it was like on every day. It was more like Party of Five or whatever that. However, those American things are. Anyway, she's got that.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Really so anyway, good. Congrats to Sir Christopher Wren.
okay, here's one from Shen Flindel. And they write, if the Rubik's Cube world record holder and the Blindfold Cube world record holder solved the same scramble, the Blindfold solver would probably be finished before the regular solver had even started.
Oh.
What's going on?
Because when you see it, you can start, right? As in when you get the cube, you just go rip.
Well, no.
Oh.
What happens is when you get the cube, you have 15 seconds to look at it and work out what you're going to do, and then work out what all the moves are going to do, and then you go, and you go, and you make it, okay? The blindfold record is 11.67 seconds, but in that rule, you get it, you look at it, and then as soon as you're ready, then you put the blindfold on, and then you solve it. So you're allowed to start before the 15 seconds.
Oh, okay.
So that's why he would always have beaten... this guy called Charlie Eggins, who's the blindfolded guy, would have beaten it before Teodor Zajda from Poland would have done his because of just the rules. In actual fact, Teodor Zajda could do it quicker, but in the rules, he has to wait his 15 seconds.
Yeah. Oh. Can I know, because James, you can solve a Rubik's Cube and you can do it really fast. Well, but you can do it. I can't do it at all.
Sure.
So
much faster than that.
Yeah.
You just try every one of the 15 billion possible places it can be, and then eventually it comes
and
in.
And then you get
force majeure. Yeah.
So my question is that if you're blindfolded, is the time that you're given that's extra looking at it, it's because there is a set way of just turning it, right, until you get there. So you've got to work out how many of those moves are, because you can. No one's going to stop you if you get it. If you go past it, presumably in the blind version of solving it, you just keep going past the final configuration.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, you might do that, but I mean, I don't have the brain capacity or exactly the understanding to do it, so I don't know exactly how it works. But I think it would be pretty unlikely for you to get the final configuration and then go past it. I guess you could go one.
But you can't
two.
See it, right?
Yeah, they've got someone. They've got someone standing by,
coughing,
them scream, stop, stop, for God's sake, stop.
No, you can't see it, but you would just know, like, because you know what order all the moves are in. So the final section of moves where you're getting the final pieces in.
that will always be the last move you make, will always be one of those.
Because the configuration changes. Yeah, yes,
exactly.
I see.
So you would, I guess it's possible you could get just past it, but you would never be miles past it.
Well, there's one behind, there's one literally behind you on the shelf, Dan. So you just start doing it now. No, we're going to get Dan to do it.
This only needs one turn to be complete. So
welcome to the next 15 hours of your life.
This is a Richard Herring special Rubik's Cube, yeah.
Dan.
Wow. I think that was even faster than you could do it.
I think, honestly, it was, yeah.
Okay, interesting. Nice. Amazing. Very, very cool.
The record for solving a Rubik's Cube was done by...
Rubik? No, it wouldn't have been the...
Correct first letter.
Rector McAdams.
Correct. From London, Ontario.
That's right.
No, it's Robot.
A
robot can now do it in 103 milliseconds.
Wow.
And for reference, it takes you between 200 and 300 milliseconds to blink. So if you're watching a robot doing the cube, it would be definitely possible for you to blink and it'll just have happened when you were blinking.
How would it not shatter the cube?
They're special, yeah. They're
reinforced and extra lubricated.
They're very lubricated, and... yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Because you can buy Rubik's lube, can't you?
Cube lube, they call
cube
it.
Cube lube, that's right.
My son and I, Ted, were trying to say supercalifragilisticexpialidocious as quick as possible the other day, and we tried to see whether or not it's possible that you can bunch them up so tightly that you can just go, splash! And if you slowed down the audio, it would break down into the entire word. And I wonder if that's possible.
It's really nice that you found someone at the same mental level as you to have conversations.
We're actually setting up a rival podcast to Fish soon.
We're dead in the water, Andy. With that kind of chat?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Don't they also, like, soap up Rubik's Cube? Are you allowed to...
You lube them.
You can lube them.
Yeah.
Bring your lube to the cube.
This is why you weren't allowed on that ICB game show.
Bring your lube to the cube with Dan Shriver.
Didn't that used to be Philip Schofield who hosted that?
Was it? What,
the cube?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
I think it was.
I think of Dan as the Philip Schofield of fish.
Oh, that's very sweet. Okay, Andy. Go on, give us another fact.
Here's one more fact about Canadian geography.
Oh, God.
I just love this so much. It's from, this is a wonderful name, Clementine Curley from Melbourne.
Mm. Melbourne? Australia?
Australia. Wow. Clementine doesn't say. Could be Melbourne, Ontario. Clementine writes, I recently learned, are you familiar with the actor Nathan Fillion?
No.
He was in Buffy, he was in Firefly and Serenity.
Oh, a lot of sci-fi stuff. I think I know who he is.
You probably know who he is. Yeah, he's a great actor, really good. Anyway, Nathan Fillion has a little parklet dedicated to him in his hometown of Edmonton, Canada, which is called... the Nathan Fillion Civilian Pavilion.
That's really good.
And is painted vermilion.
Is it really?
Yeah, it is. Oh, yeah.
That's great.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. Well, that is fantastic. But that's enough of your facts for now. We can't wait to read more of them out next week. But before we wrap up today's show, we love to hand out one of our old facts to members of Club Fish. So if you join on patreon.com/clubfish at the highest tier, which is Friend of the Podcast, we assign you one of the headline facts from the last 12 years of Fish. You get a really cool digital certificate along with it. And we like to read out who's got what. So we're going to do some now. Who wants to go first?
I'll do one. This one goes out to Sveinung Carlson. Sveinung, congratulations to you. Your fact is, if you grow cos lettuce in a spaceship, it tastes like rocket.
Perfect.
Brilliant fact.
Because they did it, and it does. They must have, when they first tasted that cos lettuce, they must have thought, we've blown this shit wide open.
Or if you're in America, it tastes like arugula.
Oh, yeah, but it doesn't work quite as well.
The joke doesn't work.
No. I've got another one here about vegetables.
Oh, yeah.
This is that the National Giant Vegetable Championship had to move venue in the mid-1980s as the pumpkins started getting too big to fit through the doors. And that now is under the custodianship of Heather Klein.
Love it.
Oh, my
God. Yeah, remember that? Do you remember we did quite a lot on big vegetables and big pumpkins and stuff?
Yes.
Not meaning to sound like a joke. It was the low-hanging fruit of its time. I mean, just giant vegetable growing competitions are just wonderfully funny things, and the people who run them are brilliant.
All right, let's get another one out here. This goes to Michael Luna. Your fact is the bearded lacewing insect incapacitates its prey by farting on it.
Oh.
That's nice.
That's nice.
That's going to look nice on your wall, framed.
It's a conversation piece, like all of these
are. It is. They stun termites 30 times their size with anal vapor. Isn't that incredible? That's like me knocking out an elephant with a fart.
Yes, yeah. I would like to see that.
Right. You'd have to get your bum right up to the elephant's nose.
Well, it's got a movable trunk, though, don't you? Yeah. I mean, that's the trunk is... Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you picked a good animal there.
How do you encourage the elephant to get its trunk near your bum, though?
Put a peanut in it.
Well...
I just think I hope no poachers are listening to this because we've given them too many good ideas. Yeah. Put a peanut in it.
Brilliant. Here's another one. This one goes out to Harry. Harry, your fact is that Ruby, a sheep which had been genetically engineered to glow in the dark, was accidentally sold to an abattoir.
Oh, no. Lovely. Another nice one to go on someone's wall.
This was an Ann Miller fact.
Was it?
Yeah. Her, Ruby's mother had been given this gene.
Anne, for the nicest woman you'll meet, she does come here with some dodgy facts, doesn't she? Do you remember the one about the bear who they had to castrate them because they'd been having sex with their family members or whatever it was?
That's right. It was a sort of incest bear in Romania or somewhere.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. No, I know. I mean, well, she likes crime, doesn't she? She likes murder.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
In fictional terms. Anyway, congratulations, Harry. That's a lovely fact.
Okay, here is another fact. This one goes under the custodianship of Zachary Nichols. Zachary, your fact is that during the launch of BBC Two in 1964, a live kangaroo got stuck in a lift at Television Centre.
Right.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
I pretended to sort of be stuck in a lift with the comedian Barry Cryer.
Oh, yeah.
So I kept sending us to the wrong floor so that I just got more time with him. Wonderful. To get more chatting with him.
Did you?
Yeah. So we went up, we went down. We were like, oh, no, this is not it. What's going on? Kind of thing. And I milked it for quite some time because he was like, oh, it's a confusing building, isn't it? And I thought, oh, which it was, wasn't it?
It was a confusing building, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. It feels like that's kidnapping.
Yeah. And a pensioner as well.
Yeah.
Mm, when you frame it in a negative way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see how that might. let's do another one. This one is going to Jay Now. And your fact is Dr. Seuss once wrote a Warner Brothers film that was banned because it accidentally predicted the Manhattan Project.
Brilliant.
A lot going on in there.
Yep.
Dr. Seuss wrote a film that was banned
by Warner Brothers.
How can you accidentally predict the most complicated human endeavor ever created? I guess you just have to predict it a bit, don't you?
Yeah, you don't have to be like, first this wocket goes in this socket, then this goes boom, and this goes doom, and loads of room is...
Oh my God, that is quite good.
That is good.
Yeah.
Before he was a children's author, he worked in the writing department for the military, didn't he? He wrote a lot of movies and so on. So he must have written something that just was a bit too close.
He also wrote one with loads of naked characters in it, didn't he? Do you remember that?
Did he?
Yeah. But then it was illustrated in the same way as his normal books.
I don't remember that one. Hmm. Here's one that goes out to Robert Dixon. Robert, your fact now and forever is the phrase, why is my poop green, is Googled most commonly between 5 and 6 a.m.
Yeah.
It does make sense.
It does.
There are peaks and troughs of when you're Googling things.
Yeah, people are most likely to find out after a long sleep, maybe.
And 6 in the morning, quite early.
Quite early.
Feels like these are people who are having a long dark night of the soul.
I think you've had a night poo. It's been green. You thought, that's probably normal. You've woken up at 4. You've spent an hour freaking out, and then you've Googled.
Interesting.
I mean, that's certainly how I did it.
Just as an example of how that might happen.
But yeah, I think this was just like Google had released a load of data about when people searched for different things and what was the most searched item in that year and whatever. And this was the funniest part of it.
Oh, God, you had a follow-up fact on this one, James. The percentage of people Googling lonely peaks at 3:24 a.m.
Yeah.
Because I normally wait until 3:25 a.m. to do that. No, I hold off.
It's not a very social hour. 3 a.m.
No, so naturally.
The reason you're lonely is because everyone else is asleep. Okay, the final one for today goes now under the custodianship of Guinevere Darrick. And your fact, Guinevere, is that in winter, we should all wear our socks outside our shoes.
Brilliant.
Dan Schreiber, you said this 11 years ago. Do you still do it?
If I was writing my predictive newspaper, I would have said it had changed the world and that's how we were all doing it since we'd said this fact.
Yeah.
And I don't think anyone's doing it.
Weird.
That's despite the science being on its side.
Because it's to stop you slipping over, right?
Exactly. You get more grip on the ice if you have your socks on the outside. And this was tested, I'm going from memory, in New Zealand. And I believe either they won an Ig Nobel Prize for it, or it was reported by Mark Abrams in the Improbable Pages. I'm pretty sure that's where I got this from. But yeah, they found that it was an obvious thing to do. If you're on very slippery ice, just take your socks off, put them on the outside.
It feels like if you're wearing specialist walking shoes with very good grip on, then maybe you shouldn't do that.
That's true. And you're allowed to wear extra socks on the inside. I think the thing that people find a bit gross is the idea of not wearing anything between your foot and your shoe. I don't like that.
Do you wear always socks with your Crocs?
Of course. Of course.
I think that's in at the moment. I mean, my kids are certainly doing it.
Wearing socks with Crocs?
Yeah, socks with Crocs.
Is it?
Yeah.
It also sounds like a Dr. Seuss book, doesn't it?
Cox and Crocs was that one. It was about another of the naked people.
It's blue period, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Hey, these are what a great batch. That's a killer batch of facts. So congratulations. You are now the custodians of these facts. So please look after them. Guinevere, Robert, Jay, Zachary, Harry, Michael, Heather, and Sveinung. You hopefully have your digitally printed version of this. And if you want your own fact, again, just go to patreon.com/clubfish. But if you rather just listen to this show with someone who's hoping that they can get their fact read out, podcast@qi.com. Send them our way. Andy goes through the emails. He cherry picks the best. He brings them here. We love reading them. So please continue to send them along. But for now, that's all from me, James, and Andy. And we'll see you again on Friday with another episode of No Such Thing as a Fish. But for now, bye.